You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon. From the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Leanne Moroz. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, November 13th, 2018.
Through this campaign, I want to find out if Bloomington residents feel the way I feel about my fit for the job. Because running for mayor is a profound decision that deserves the utmost respect and attention.
Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge announced this morning that she's exploring the possibility of running for Bloomington mayor. In today's feature report, we'll hear Barge's remarks on her potential candidacy and Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton's administration. That's coming up later in the program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Monroe County Veterans Service Officer Mary Elftman tells the story of Andrew Ferguson, the only African-American Revolutionary War veteran buried in Indiana. That's coming up in this week's edition of the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana. But first, your daily headlines.
Last week, Indiana voters ratified a change in the state's constitution. As WFHB's Gabe Donnelly reports, that change requires the state's General Assembly to only pass balanced budgets.
This midterm election, residents voted yes on Indiana Public Question Number 1 to alter the state constitution. The State House revises the state's budget every 2 years after the general election takes place. This legislative session is commonly referred to as a long session due to the extended time it takes to approve the budget. Last week's constitutional change, which mandates balanced budgets, passed with over 70% of voters approving the measure. Indiana joins upwards of 40 other states with similar requirements. The amendment also allows for this rule to be suspended if a supermajority of two-thirds from the state's House of Representatives and the state Senate choose to do so. The amendment was championed by Vice President and former Indiana Governor Mike Pence, who introduced the idea back in 2015. The change to Indiana's constitution is significant because the state's governing document is one of the hardest to change. Unlike most states, Indiana's constitution does not contain any clause that provides for a citizen referendum on statutes or constitutional amendments. The only method to amend the Indiana state constitution is through the General Assembly. Once the first assembly passes an amendment, it must be passed by the next successive assembly after a general election. The amendment then goes to public vote, which is exactly what happened with the balanced budget initiative. Support for the amendment comes primarily from Republican camps, but with Democratic support as well over time. The credit agency Moody's praised the budget mandate, referring to it as credit positive. The main skepticism comes from Indiana unions. They are worried that it will hurt pensions for teachers, police, and firefighters in the state. However, according to the nonpartisan Indiana Public Retirement System, INPRS, these worries are incorrect. INPRS released a series of statements claiming that the amendment will have no impact on pre-funded public pension funds. For WFHB, I'm Gabe Donnelly.
As winter approaches, Indiana's homeless face potentially life-threatening temperature drops. As WFHB correspondent Annie Aguiar reports, the dangerous cold comes at a time when area shelters are in the most need of volunteers and donations.
Recent drops in temperature can exacerbate the problems faced by those experiencing homelessness. The National Healthcare for the Homeless Council says hypothermia can set in at anywhere from 32 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. When it gets cold, body heat escapes through the skin and internal temperatures can drop to dangerous lows. In Bloomington, the Shalom Community Center provides shelter, hot meals, and winter clothing for the area's homeless. Executive Director Forrest Gilmore says that as the cold approaches, that need grows.
We're hitting winter once again, and that creates life-threatening conditions for people as we get into these freezing temperatures. And so really important time to take extra care of our homeless neighbors and support them so that they can come out of the winter healthy and okay and safe.
Gilmore says the area has had very few deaths over the last decade due to cold temperatures, and that he can only remember one. Ian Tyler Stark moved to Bloomington from Cincinnati before becoming homeless. He was found dead in December of 2013 during the North American polar vortex when temperatures dropped below freezing. Stark was found in a stairwell at an apartment complex on Bloomington's north side. Bloomington police were reportedly unsure of his exact cause of death, but ruled out foul play. The day his body was found, Stark was wearing wet clothing and temperatures reached a low of 20 degrees. He was 24 years old. Gilmore says that the low amount of deaths in the area is due to services such as the Interfaith Winter Shelter, Shalom Community Center, and Wheeler Mission. Just in Bloomington, the area's estimated 300 homeless will face the cold with the help of centers like Shalom.
Shalom does a number of things. We offer both a day and overnight shelter, as well as showers, laundry, meals, that kind of thing. We have several housing programs to help people move out of homelessness into homes, long-term homes. And we try and pull all those services together to help people succeed in life. So a number of different supports, certainly with this time of year when cold is so strong, our emergency services are most pertinent in helping people get off the street and address the weather safely.
It's not just deaths that have decreased in the last decade. There are fewer cases of frostbite, and temperatures in the past that would have taken fingers and toes don't, due to services from centers such as Shalom. The center works with 200 to 300 people a day, Gilmore says, and they often can't receive the help they need because of negative attitudes towards the homeless and those experiencing poverty.
Well, we see in our center 200 to 300 people a day. We know that not all of those are homeless, but a significant number of them are. On any given day, we know that there's well over 300 people experiencing homelessness in our community, adults and children. There's a significant number of people that have this basic kind of threat to their existence there because of the weather. There's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of negativity directed at people experiencing homelessness and experiencing poverty. And probably the thing that I think is most valuable is to just recognize and own the humanity of every person, including people in awful circumstances, and to just honor them and support them and care for them and help them do better.
As temperatures drop, the needs that the center addresses shift. Gilmore and his co-workers are now tasked with finding weather-appropriate clothing in addition to providing basic needs.
At most basic, we provide shelter. So we have day shelter at the Shalom Center itself from 8 to 4 every day. And then we have overnight shelter at Friends Place, which is from 5 until 7 the next morning. So that's the most basic support that we provide for people in this time of year. But we also provide meals so that people can, you know, obviously be fed, and showers, laundry. But I think probably this time of year, what's most important in terms of how the community can engage is in terms of clothing. So making sure that people have proper winter clothing, so that they can handle the elements when they're outside well. And so that's everything from coats, hats, and gloves, long underwear, sleeping bag, people have to sleep outside, blanket, things of that sort that really help, especially this time of year.
The center struggles with providing the resources those dealing with poverty and homelessness need in the winter. They don't receive as many donations as they need, Gilmore says, and some people have to go without.
We are definitely not able to keep up right now with the need for cold weather clothing. And so we absolutely need support there. Hats, gloves, and coat in particular. Long underwear is really helpful too. Sleeping bags are really helpful. But we're definitely not meeting the demand. And so there's people that are going without warm weather clothing. Sweatshirts are really valuable too at this time of year. Wool socks, you know, those kinds of things.
Those wanting to donate items can bring them to the center, located at 620 South Walnut Street in Bloomington, between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., 7 days a week. For WFHB, I'm Annie Aguiar.
Indiana residents support the legalization of marijuana, according to a recent Ball State University survey. The 2018 Hoosier Survey from Ball State's Public Affairs Program interviewed over 600 Indiana residents by telephone. The survey aims to identify public opinion on potential policy issues for the upcoming legislative session. The Indiana legislature reconvenes in January. Among the survey results, about half of respondents say cocaine and methamphetamines are a, quote, very serious problem in the state. Fewer respondents say they believe that opioids are a serious problem. The Ball State study also found that respondents say they believe alcohol abuse is a bigger problem in the state than marijuana use. Only about a quarter of respondents reported believing marijuana use is a problem in the state. 81% of respondents say they believe that marijuana should be legalized in some fashion. Those results were split almost evenly between allowing recreational use and only legalizing medical use, with respondents having a slight preference for medical legalization only. The survey also examined opinions on solutions to drug problems. A majority of respondents say they feel not enough is being done to improve treatments, make treatments more affordable, and crack down on drug dealers.
A new report says Indiana's tourism and recreation industry will face tougher seasons as climate change worsens across the state. A report on Monday by Purdue University's Climate Change Resource Center is the latest analysis how climate change will impact Indiana. The report says summers and winters will change by as much as a month due to global warming. The analysis says the state's tourism industry could suffer as a result of seasonal shifts, estimated to arrive by approximately 2050. Meanwhile, Indiana's spring and fall temperatures are forecast to warm 4 to 6 degrees, according to the Purdue report. The Purdue Climate Change Resource Center report also says the state's annual rainfall will also increase. The report is available online at Purdue University's website. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Leanne Morose. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
In the cold gray morning, Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge announced she's forming an exploratory committee to look into a run for Bloomington mayor. Barge addressed reports at RCA Park on Bloomington's south side earlier today. During the press conference, she repeatedly criticized current Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton's administration for alleged mismanagement. We'll hear Barge's full remarks in today's feature report.
Good morning. My name is Amanda Barge, and I'm a lifelong resident of Bloomington. I'm a mom. I'm a business owner. I'm also a community organizer. I currently serve as president of the Monroe County Commissioners, and we are the executive, administrative, and legislative body of county government. I'm here today to announce that I'm filing paperwork to create an exploratory committee, which is the first step towards a possible candidacy for mayor of Bloomington in 2019. And I'm here announcing in Broadview, which is one of my favorite neighborhoods. And the reason that we're announcing in Broadview is that it's emblematic of the importance of community. It has a rich history of neighbors and families who care about each other. Together, they faced adversity with imagination and determination during the departure of the RCA factory. Both of my parents and my father-in-law worked for RCA. I know firsthand how much that closure hurt families. Also, Broadview is one of only a few core neighborhoods still financially viable for lower and middle income families. And importantly, like nearby core neighborhoods, it stands to be impacted by many large local projects like Switchyard Park, the hospital move, and the expansion of our convention center, which makes collaborative and creative leadership so necessary. So, in the spirit of this strong and vibrant neighborhood, I am going to vow to represent all areas of this community, and to really amplify the voices of all people who are feeling not heard, no matter where they live. I want to be clear, I have every interest in running for mayor, but in order to do that responsibly, anyone choosing to be mayor must first listen and learn before they lead. I'm starting in Broadview, but I'll be visiting countless neighborhoods, social service organizations, and businesses in the coming weeks. and I'll detail my exact plans for my exploratory committee next Monday. But today I'd like to outline three precise reasons that I'm exploring a run for mayor. First, we are not getting the government that we were promised. I supported John Hamilton. I made phone calls for him. I canvassed neighborhoods. I drove all over town putting out signs for him. I voted for him. I believed that he wanted to take Bloomington in a new direction and that he would deliver on the progressive values many of us hold dear. What we heard were big promises, but what we got was my way or the highway governing. Nearly every city government initiative has stalled, derailed, or failed because of leadership that lacks inclusiveness or that truly values the input of other people. Whether it's annexation, the Bearcat armored vehicle purchase, the mishandled broadband initiative, the publishing of private addresses of drug overdose victims, or even something simple that could have been managed easily, like the introduction of scooter businesses, there seems to be a Midas touch in reverse effect going on. There may be good intentions, but there's bad management, and people are looking for a different style of leadership. Second, I believe I have the leadership, the skills, and I have the heart and the experience and the collaborative spirit that is necessary to do the job and to do it well. As a lifelong resident, parent, committed Democrat, small business owner, county executive, I know how to lead, and I appreciate the importance of having a collaborative vision that excites people and makes them want to be a part of their government, and that is so important. Through this campaign, I want to find out if Bloomington residents feel the way I feel about my fit for the job. Because running for mayor is a profound decision that deserves the utmost respect and attention. I like to know what other people think. I want to know what people want out of their public servants. I like to know how people feel about the policies that impact them. And so far, I'm hearing from a lot of you that you just aren't getting the government that you were promised. So many people are expressing concerns to me. We don't have enough high-paying jobs. We don't have an actual vision for affordable housing. And yet, still people suffering every day with substance use disorder issues. In many ways, I think we're in an identity crisis as we grow and we change. But I grew up here. We've always been changing. That's not necessarily a new challenge. We're still trying to decide what kind of town we want to be, and I want to help you figure that out. What is new and striking to me, though, is the way that we're approaching these opportunities and challenges and the ways that we're failing to do so. Those failed approaches bring me to my next reason. The third reason is that in my heart, I know we can do better and that this community needs someone to hear them. When I think about the talent of city government employees and hear from so many of them that they feel stymied by leadership at the top, I know they deserve better. When I see someone who adamantly criticizes the influence of money in politics, but then raise unprecedented amounts of cash from Indianapolis, from DC for a mayoral race, I know we can do better. When I constantly hear about city government hiring consultant after consultant, especially out of town, when I know we have local experts and we also have great city employees that can do that work, I know that we should be doing better. When issues blow up in city government's face because the public is excluded from input and decision making, I am determined that we can do better. When I see somebody who is changing the nature of our politics and government in Bloomington for our Democratic Party, I know that all I can think is that we can be better than that. We are better than that. So I'm creating an exploratory committee with the following principle: listening, learning, and leading, in that order. I'm excited about listening to my fellow residents on how they'd like to see their city government truly represent them. I'm excited to learn how I can be that person to get that done, and I'm excited to potentially lead us towards solutions. Thank you for your interest, and I look forward to working alongside you throughout this process. You'll all be hearing from me as I'm hearing from you. Thank you for being here today.
Right now, we have so many big challenges in this community, and what we need is collaborative leadership, and what we're getting is really sort of ask for ask for forgiveness rather than permission. And what I'd like to do is to see us have a more inclusive city government.
You mentioned that you were a big supporter of the mayor's, actually, when he ran. You just touched on this, but what are some of the key things that you're seeing that don't really line up with what you thought?
Sure. In 2015, when he ran, he made a lot of great promises. And, you know, he promised to actually end homelessness within 5 years at one point. He made a lot of promises that really stuck with a lot of us locals here thinking, yeah, we've got some major problems, and he had a really great progressive agenda. Unfortunately, though, every initiative I see him try has failed. And this isn't personal. I still consider John Hamilton a friend, and he himself will say that, you know, competition is good for democracy. So we're giving voters a potential choice should I decide to run.
What makes you think that you could have more success with getting some of those initiatives done?
Sure. So right now I don't have, I'm just listening, right? So right now I'm going to spend the next few weeks talking to residents and hearing what they have to say, and then I'll make a decision if I'm actually going to run. And I will answer that question should I decide to definitely run. But right now I want to hear from people, and I want to hear from people that I normally don't get to talk to and what they think and what they think is needed.
What type of timeline are you operating on?
Sure. So right now, starting today, I'm going to start today, and I'll be through the next few weeks through at the end of December, and I'll probably make a decision sometime in January.
You mentioned the money factor here. Yes. Against someone who does have the power to fundraise, do you think that you could be competitive in this race?
So if money won races, right, we wouldn't have seen so many incumbents kind of lose this past time. I think people are ready for something different. I don't think money should be what makes a good campaign. So absolutely, he does have a lot of money, and he will use the money, right? But what's important is our issues and what resonates with voters. That's what people care about. For example, we'll use the Bearcat as an example, sort of the lack of transparency. And I know that Mr. Hamilton likes to talk about, you know, how transparent he is. However, more often than not, we're learning about something after it's already happened, and then he'll have listening sessions. So it's this sort of backwards inclusivity that by the time that the decision has been made, people don't feel heard and people don't feel represented. The convention center, trying to work with the city on the convention center, was absolutely a piece of the frustration that I feel and that so many of us feel in the county, but also city residents. I mean, I've met so many city residents who just want to see this happen and have felt frustrated by the mayor's decisions. But so yeah, it's just one piece in the pattern.
And are you hoping, because of your county ties, that you'll be able to do more in a position as mayor, possibly, if you decide to run?
I think anyone who has, if you look at the history of our mayors, they have had really great relationship with the county. In fact, one of our mayors was usually on the agenda and would come and visit the commissioners. I know that they regularly had lunch, and that is something that's missing. So absolutely what is needed is our better city-county relations. We're going to be releasing a detailed plan on Monday for sure. So, but absolutely, I'll be
including like town meetings or
absolutely
knocking
yeah.
on doors or
meetings, knocking on door, all those things. I'm pretty excited about it actually. And businesses, I'll be visiting businesses. We'll give it to everybody on Monday.
Who's in the exploratory committee?
That is something else we'll be announcing as well as time goes on. I'm just making the decision, just filing paperwork today, and just getting started. So,
have you filed yet, or are you doing that later?
I'm getting ready to go do that. Yep,
like right after this.
Yes, right after this.
That was Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge speaking with reporters during this morning's announcement that she's formed an exploratory committee to look into running for Bloomington mayor. Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
Coming up next, the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana.
Monroe County's Bicentennial Committee presents The Bicentennial Journal, stories celebrating the rich history of Monroe County.
my Monroe County story. I am Mary Elfman, Monroe County Veteran Service Officer. I'm here to tell the story of Andrew Ferguson, the only African-American Revolutionary War veteran buried here in Monroe County. Andrew Ferguson was born in Virginia, 1765. On March 1st, 1784, the Virginia Territory was ceded to the United States, and many families and individuals migrated from the eastern colonies to the new Indiana. Andrew Ferguson, Revolutionary War veteran, was one of these. Andrew does not appear in the census until 1830. He is listed as one free colored male over 55 and under 100, and with him was one free colored female over 36 and under 55. This was his wife, who called herself Aunt Jenny. We know that Andrew Ferguson died in 1855 or 1856. The records available do not cover his demise, but after research, we find in the Bloomington Courier on February 14, 1896, that a woman connected with Daughters of the American Revolution reached out to the Courier to inquire on the burial places of Monroe County Revolutionary War heroes. C.H. Stone wrote in the edition, "He is probably the only color soldier of the Revolution buried in Indiana. The above recalls to our mind circumstances connected to the death and burial of this old colored patriot. During the summer of 1856, the old man lived with his wife, Aunt Jenny, in a log cabin on South Lincoln Street, just north of Harry Orchard property between 3rd and 4th Street. He was a very feeble old man and was greatly liked. He was a pensioner, drawing a small pittance for his yeoman services in the Revolutionary War. He eked out an existence for himself and his wife by doing odd chores about the city. Finally, in the summer of 1856, he succumbed to the encroachment of old age, being at the time of his death something over 100 years of age. At the time, the sexton of the cemetery, James Slocan, dug a grave and called upon James Sluice, who was in the livery business, to assist him in giving the old man a decent burial. During the meantime, no one had called to minister to the wants of the old man, who had risked his life many times and suffered privations for his country. No one was at his bedside when his soul took earthly flight, but the faithful old woman, whom he called his wife, her gray head bowed in sorrow."
Join us next week for another edition of the Monroe County Bicentennial Journal.
Support for the Bicentennial Journal and WFHB comes from Monroe County and Visit Bloomington. More information about Monroe County's Bicentennial is available at monroecounty200.us.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Annie Aguiar, Andrew McKieran, and Gabe Donnelly. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
The Bicentennial Journal is produced by Kate Welch with help from Joyce Poling. Our engineer is Tal Rothenberg. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Leanne Murrows.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Counterspin, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting's weekly radio show, providing a critical examination of national headlines. That's coming up next on WFHB.